Vanity of vanities. How can you not like a book that starts out like that? Welcome to the Ponder New Podcast, and I'm Pastor Rob Mayalis. This week, as we work through one book in the Bible at a time, we are in the book of Ecclesiastes. You may have heard of many of the parts of a book of Ecclesiastes, and not even in church settings. For instance, there's that song from the 60s, "To Everything There's a Season, Turn, Turn, Turn" by the Birds. Turns out, though, this book, again, is often quoted outside of churches. And so I commend it to you not only for your own wisdom and reflection, but also as a book that might really open up some doors to talk to people that aren't familiar with the Bible and aren't necessarily familiar with Christian teachings and Christian life. So without further ado, let's get pondering.
Butterfly in the sky, I can go twice as high. Take a look, it's in a book, a reading rainbow.
For everything there is a season and a time for every matter under heaven. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to pluck up what is planted. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to break down and a time to build up. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. A time to throw away stones and a time to gather stones together. A time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing. A time to seek and a time to lose. A time to keep and a time to throw away. A time to tear and a time to sow. A time to keep silent and a time to speak. A time to love and a time to hate. A time for war and a time for peace.
The book of Ecclesiastes reminds me a lot of the book of Job. And that's not altogether surprising. If you remember way back when, before we really began looking at one book of the Bible each week, I did a couple intro episodes on how to read the Bible. And one of them was about how the Bible has different kinds of literature. It's as if the Bible itself is a library. And just like in a library, there are atlases and poems and dictionaries and historical scholarly works, fiction, and so forth, the Bible has different types of genres or literature, and you kind of have to have a different bit of lens for them. And this section of scripture that we're in now, going back to Job, Psalms, Proverbs, this week Ecclesiastes, in Hebrew, it actually has its own kind of distinction. The Hebrew Bible kind of separates it out. And maybe your table of contents in your own Bible, or one of those Sunday school charts that you saw when you were a kid that had different kind of sections of the Bible, will call this the wisdom literature. And the point is that it's not about historical events. This isn't a historical chronologue of there was this battle and then that battle, or this family and that family. Rather, it's some reflection. Some reflection on what life is about. These are the kind of books where when you read them, you almost want a campfire, or maybe for some of you, a cigar and a drink or something, or just a kind of a long walk on the beach. I mean, you want to reflect on them and think, what is going on here? Because they're asking the big questions of life. What are we here for? Does life have meaning? What do we deal and how do we respond to and think about suffering, especially in light of a God who has promised mercy and so forth? And all of these, again, big questions about life. And the book of Ecclesiastes is exactly one of those kind of books. However, I think there's a special connection to Job that I'd like to draw out. In the story of Job, if you recall, Job is, well, I don't know what the right verb is. Tortured is too strong, but maybe not. Suffers and has everything taken away. And so the question is, what does faith look like? Who is God? And really, what is life about? Does life have meaning in the face of such suffering? Ecclesiastes kind of flips the coin. And in the book of Ecclesiastes, it's probably written by Solomon. There are some people who debate whether it was written by Solomon or not. And in the book, there are different names for the person who kind of writes it. It could be the philosopher, the king, the preacher, and so forth. I'm going to refer to the author of Ecclesiastes as Solomon. And I want to do so first because Solomon is somebody who lived a life where he had all the luxuries in the world. And it's clear that whoever wrote this was somebody who had experienced great wealth and sort of the pleasures that would come from having a position of wealth and power. And I think that's important because that's really kind of the take on this book is it's not why or how can life have meaning in light of the reality of suffering. This is almost the exact opposite. Does life have any meaning when we're given all the things that would and should have supposedly made us happy? In other words, it looks at the meaninglessness of life, but rather than from a position of scarcity, really from one of abundance. In fact, the beginning of the book starts out vanity of vanities. Vanity of vanities, what gain is there from all the toil which one toils under the sun? And the word there for vanity is actually havel in Hebrew, which means smoke. It's all smoke and mirrors. You can do the right thing, and by doing so, you can have access to all sorts of pleasures. But as it turns out, they're not going to make you more virtuous. They're not necessarily going to make you wiser, and they will likely not even bring you content. And even if you work hard, the future is so contingent, so uncertain, that you may work hard to plow today and have no crops because there's no rain, or you will invest time in your children and they can still grow up to be wicked. So there's this way in which kind of what's the point of it all anyway? Even if it all works out, it still might not be enough. So what do we do with this, what we might even want to call cynicism? How do we interpret this? Well, one way we can think about it is to view this as wisdom literature and not in the same way that we would understand, say, the writings of the prophet Isaiah or the Ten Commandments. The New Testament itself isn't quoting the book of Ecclesiastes very often. So internally, the book of Ecclesiastes is viewed as, again, this kind of interesting, we might even offer inspired take, but it's not the last word. It's a valid, wise perspective, but not the authoritative and only one. And so as such, the way that we should view this book is for a late night conversation. And if it's wisdom literature, the point is not to digest tons of it at a time, but just to kind of take a brief snippet, right? To everything, there is a season under the sun or under the heaven, a time to be born, a time to die, a time for war and a time for peace, and to reflect on what this means in the broader scope and what this means in our lives. And think about what we can learn from the ancients, from those who have gone before us. And although technology is so different in some ways, the fundamental human condition remains. So I would commend to you that one way that we can think about this book is simply to let it be wisdom literature. Take a verse, take a couple of verses, ponder them, make them page a day, calendars or other ways to kind of reflect on them. But don't use them in the same kind of true north that we would the Sermon on the Mount or the Lord's Prayer or other kind of core stories of Jesus. Just view this book and these books in the Bible as not the ending answers, but a way to wrestle with, an arena for wrestling with philosophical questions, and to every now and then know we're going to go to this kind of arena and we're going to ponder these deeper things of life. And in a way, too, these even might be books that evangelically, in terms of reaching out to people who aren't yet Christian or on the margins of Christianity, these might be books which have a lot of accessibility. I know when I've had to do funerals for people, I often find, especially if they're not, well-churched, and I'm kind of trying to be sensitive to the fact that there are people of different faith traditions or backgrounds, these words here, to everything there is a season, and not just because it was a 1960s song by the Byrds, but I think there is a way in which this stuff in Ecclesiastes can be a way that can open up bridges between us and people who haven't yet come to confess Jesus as Lord. For us, though, as Christians, it's a bit almost insincere for us to wrestle with these questions of purpose, meaning, suffering, even pleasure, the direction of our lives outside of Jesus Christ, his death and his resurrection. I mean, if we're going to talk about what is the meaning of suffering as Christians, it's almost impossible for us to do so without thinking about Jesus' own suffering. Or if we're going to talk about how we understand our lives in terms of our place in the cosmos, to not think about the resurrection, it just kind of doesn't make sense. And in this way, we can, as Christians, look at the book of Ecclesiastes as, what does life look like if you don't have God? If you don't have a God who loves you, if you don't have a God who raises the dead to life, if you don't have a God who is daily forgiving sins, this is what it means. What it means is that it's going to be short, it's going to be out of your control, and so the best you can do then is simply to eat, drink, and be merry, and not worry about anything else. And as Christians, we want to say, hey, there's got to be more than that. I think in many ways that reality, though, that reality that there is something vain outside of the life of faith is something that we don't want to lose right now. And why I say that is because I'm dealing right now with this, I don't want to say surge, but this steady increase in the last year or two of young adults into my congregation. And I feel that this is echoing like a broader data set that's out there, that young adults and young people today, not so much millennials, but the generation after them and even the generation after them, may actually be showing like a recovering interest in faith. And I think what's going on is that the world has kind of projected a sense of, do whatever makes you happy. And as long as it makes you happy and it's not kind of being a jerk to somebody else, that's okay. And there may or may not be a God, but that God really isn't too invested in our lives, so you may as well just kind of get on. This actually is nothing, as the book of Ecclesiastes says, there's nothing new under the sun. This is really Epicureanism. And Epicureanism is this ancient Greek philosophy that I think actually shares a lot in common with Ecclesiastes. Well, I'm going to finesse that later. And Epicureanism says, look, there probably are gods, but they're just doing their godly thing, and they're off somewhere in their Olympus, in their heavens, wherever they are, and they don't really care about us. So it's not that we don't acknowledge that there is some creative principle beyond our comprehension, but fundamentally we're here. And so we're going to die, and so therefore life is a process of maximizing my own pleasure. And it turns out that Epicureans weren't sort of 15-year-old Bacchanalian, drunken, whatever, hedonists. I mean, they were people who, they wanted wine and they were going to drink to excess, but they wanted it to be a nice wine, not just the cheap one, thank you. And I think in many ways, this is kind of where the world is today, where we don't really, as a sort of a baseline assumption anymore, believe that there is a loving, caring God who raises the dead to life, who's invested in our lives and is pursuing us and wants a personal relationship with us. And I think that our culture, starting with kind of really the boomer generation, really has gone on this kind of really highly individualistic, it's all about kind of my pursuit of my dreams and my pleasure kind of path. But the boomer generation who sort of started going on that path had as a backdrop a very different sort of religious ethos, which even if they were rebelling against, they still knew about and were still in contact with. And the youth today who are growing up, they've just been sort of told by society, like, well, do whatever you want as long as it makes you happy. And they're kind of waking up and they're saying, like, that actually didn't work. It's all vanity, vanity of vanities. I kind of sowed my wild oats and it didn't taste very good. And they're hungry for something deeper, something that isn't like just a trend, but something they can actually build and base their life on that is greater than their sort of emotions at a given moment. And so we're seeing again this wave of young adults coming back into the church across the country. And I think that the book of Ecclesiastes might really be a fascinating book to talk about with young adults who, again, have lived in kind of a Solomon-like world where everything was kind of permissible and they had access to. And they're kind of saying, like, vanity of vanities, is there anything more? And as where Solomon in the end kind of says, there's really nothing more finally than in the end than to, you know, fear the Lord and to kind of live your life. Whereas as Christians, we want to say, actually, there's something a little bit different. To put it poetically, the book of Ecclesiastes kind of imagines us as grains of sand on the shores of the infinite. And it's not, again, necessary. I don't think it goes so far as to be Epicurean. I think there is a deeper sense of theology. But it imagines us, again, like we're kind of this meaningless kind of speck of sand on the shores of the infinite. And we can take comfort knowing that finally we're on the shores of the infinite. Whereas Christians, we want to argue, actually, we're part of the body of Christ, that our life has an intense purpose and meaning, and that is found in doing the good works that God has called us to do in Jesus Christ. So I think, again, the book of Ecclesiastes can be a way, I think, into conversation, and then even to kind of flip it on its head and say, but there is something more. I'll go a step further with you and say that the book of Ecclesiastes is finally a fairly humbling book. It doesn't ever let us get too far off the ground as humans. It's a reminder that our job is life under the sun. And I think this actually could be something as well, that if we're going to work with people that are new to the Christian faith, which I think the next 25 years of the church hopefully includes working with people new to the faith, this might be a helpful reminder for us. I've often met Christians, especially who are newer Christians, and they're so excited about the transforming love of God in Jesus Christ that they begin to think that they're going to be able to transcend the human condition. And if they're more conservative, this is more for the self, that they're going to be able to sort of rid themselves of all addiction, lust, greed, pride, vanity, and so forth. And if they're more progressive, this is that we're going to be able to sort of eradicate all of the social ills that exist. And some of this idealism, this belief that we could actually change things, has been so important not only for history, and is the Christian witness that we, through Jesus Christ, the story does go on. It's not simply vanity of vanities, that there actually is a way in which we can love and serve our neighbor and that we can overcome specific sins in our life and in this broader world. But the book of Ecclesiastes is really much more understated about that. And here, I loved a commentary that I read by Martin Luther on Ecclesiastes. It was so good and so helpful in this direction. And what Luther, as he's reading Solomon, he finds this sort of real freedom and real delight in that Solomon reminds him that even if we kind of do life right, and for Luther, this includes doing it right with Jesus Christ, that we're not going to rid the world of all wickedness. There's still going to be unrighteousness. And that until Jesus comes again, we're not going to fix it all. And I do think there can be a way in which Ecclesiastes and that tempered enthusiasm might be something, too, that I know for myself is really helpful. And I think for a lot of others can be helpful to kind of remind us, yes, we're called. And Solomon never says don't work. We are called to work and to labor and to toil, but there's a way in which when we labor and work and toil, we know that we're not necessarily going to overcome the human condition. In fact, I'll end this podcast on Ecclesiastes with a quote by Martin Luther about this book in the words of Solomon. And he says, "Evil is present in every way of life. Therefore, the best thing to do is to enjoy the things you have in the present, to do everything in the present, and to let what is evil flow past you. This is the way to make fun of the world. In short, anyone who wants to live quietly should put the proposition to himself that the world, in this world, he will see nothing but vanity. He should not be sad if something evil happens, but he should rather be happy with the good things that are present. If you are thrust into the obligation of having to help make things better, do what is permissible, and God will do what God wills. But if you want to go beyond this and mingle with the world, straighten every curve, cure every evil, and throw Satan out of the world, you will cause yourself nothing but labor and sorrow, and you will accomplish no more than if you were to forbid the Elbe River to flow." So again, Luther here, I think, draws us back in before we sort of go so high and mighty saying, okay, well, if Jesus has come, then we've overcome suffering, we've overcome meaninglessness, we've figured out all the problems, to remind ourselves that the wisdom literature is there and it's endured for the ages because it reminds us, it kind of tempers us, slows us down, and causes us to be more reflective about what we can do and what our limits are. For indeed, for everything under the heaven, there is a season to be born, a season to die, a season to build up, and a time to tear down.